Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com, produced by Sharka Creative, that is Shark with a C, not a K. You see the logo in orange and blue on the wall behind me. I'm John Marino, and we are made possible by our good friends over at Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities right through April of 2021. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis and Hightower Westchester at Hightower. They manage your wealth to a fiduciary standard. Welcome to the Sports Report here on Westchester Talk Radio. And from time to time on the Sports Report, we talk with Westchester sports luminaries, dignitaries, and icons. And we are joined today by J. Fred Singleton. Let's use his first initial J for his real given name, Joseph. We know him as Fred Singleton. Why do you use Fred instead of Joe or Joseph?
Well, good morning, John. Thanks for having me. So I was born, as you mentioned, Joseph Frederick Singleton. My father, the late Joseph Tyson Singleton. We both shared the first same name. And very early on, they said, well, we can't be calling both of them Joseph. It's going to be confusing. So they just started calling me Fred by my middle name.
By your middle
and
name.
And that just stuck.
And it stuck. Yeah. The rest is history, as they say. Now, Fred, yes, you are a longtime track and field coach at White Plains High School. Meet director of the annual Glenn D. Lauch Track and Field Games at White Plains High. Also, you, among other things, you're a member of the Westchester Sports Hall of Fame, and you are also an accomplished author who I think may be a bit of a soothsayer. We'll talk about that and about the book you've written. We've talked about that the past few years when we've had a chance to sit down and talk. We'll talk about it again right here on Westchester Talk Radio. Now, Fred Singleton, I got to ask you this off the bat. You have a famous brother, Ken Singleton, longtime major league outfielder with the Mets, Orioles, and other teams too, and longtime Yankees broadcaster. Was there competition growing up in the Singleton household between you and Ken?
Well, the fact that we played different sports cut down on the competition, and so too the 5-year gap in our ages. So at the
Who's
time,
older? You or him? Who's older?
Ken. I remind him he's much older. So.
Okay.
So as we were in Graham Elementary School back then in Mount Vernon, the schools went from kindergarten to eighth grade. We were in the same school for a long time, but, you know, I was a little kid and he was growing to be a teenager. So there really wasn't a lot of competition. I mean, we'd go in the backyard. I'd throw the ball to him. He'd hit it over the roof. He'd strike me out. So that wasn't too much competition. We both kind of were pretty good basketball players, and we would often shoot baskets. There's a famous family story. One of the places we used to play was at Pelham High School, which wasn't too far from our house. And at one time, when I was in high school, Kenny and I jogged down to Pelham High School to play basketball. And being a track person, by the time we got down there, he was a little bit winded. And so I was able to take advantage of him on the first game. But then he caught his breath, and him being a little bit bigger than me, and I will finally admit, a better basketball player than me, he was able to go ahead and beat me for 2 out of 3.
Now, you never really got him into any kind of a real track competition, right? Which would have been more up your alley. No hurdling or anything like that? No? No?
No, Ken was not one of the swiftest of the baseball players. And that definitely would have gone in my direction. I guess we could have done some kind of, if you remember the old show, Battle of the Stars, back on ABC, where Howard Cosell narrated it. We could have come up with a series of events, maybe playing tennis. He would have beat me in golf. He would have beat me in basketball and swimming. I would have beat him in running, and clearly he would have beat me in baseball. So
here's something I came across about Ken a long time ago. Even though he was a right-handed baseball player, right-handed thrower, he was a natural lefty in basketball. Is that true?
Yes. So Ken grew up as a left-hander, and he loved Willie Mays. And so he turned himself around and started batting right-handed, so in like little pickup games, so that he could be like his hero, Willie Mays. Uh-huh. Ken, in the major leagues, Ken would throw the baseball with his right hand,
right,
but he shoots a basketball with his left hand, and he throws a football with his left hand. So, you know, he had that little skill that most of us don't have.
I took that liking to him so many years ago, too, when I was a teenager and he was with the Mets and I was in high school, because even though I'm basically right-handed, I'm a natural lefty in basketball, and I spent the summer after my freshman year learning how to shoot right-handed that summer. And to this day, in my mid-60s, if you watch my moves, even guys I went to high school with back then will still swear, "Hey, Marino, you shot left-handed." For 1 year, I did. After freshman year, I shot right-handed, even though my moves were those of a lefty, kind of like Steve Nash style, all the moves of a lefty, but shot right-handed. Bill Walton, the same thing, too, although I would not equate my basketball game with their game. So that's maybe a story for you.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah. Mount Vernon native, you are. The family, the Singleton family, grew up in a pretty famous home in Mount Vernon, the Branca household.
Yes, my parents in 1954 moved to Mount Vernon from Harlem. I was 2 years old, and they purchased the house from the Branca family. So 409 Seneca has the distinction of having two major leaguers grow up in that house.
Is that a landmark in Mount Vernon, that house, that address?
I don't think so. You would think from a sports, along with the Williams household,
right,
and a few others, the McRae household. Uh-huh. But every so often when I'm down in the Bronx and I come back, I get off the highway and just drive around to look at the old neighborhood where we used to live and all my friends who I'm still in contact with.
Mm-hmm. You were born in Harlem, you and Ken both, right? You grew up.
I was born at Columbia Presbyterian, which ironically is right across the street from the Armory, where I spend a lot of time with my track kids on 168th Street.
What street did you live on? What street did you live on in Harlem?
Oh my goodness, that is a question that I would have to go research.
I grew up in Harlem too, 107th Street, 2nd Avenue. Grew up in the projects there, so we were likely within walking distance of each other.
Yeah, I think we were on about 138th Street, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
But eventually you made it to Mount Vernon, and that household there, you and the Brankas shared at different times. Got to be made a landmark if it's not already, just for the historical purposes and perspective of that address. And that, what's the address again? 409 Seneca?
Yeah, you know, for years I've wanted to knock on the door just to
remind people, see
if they would let us in. I don't know in these days of COVID if they would allow me in or not, but I've always been interested in going back. And I remember the last few days before my parents moved to Maryland in 1982, being in the house for the last time.
Mm-hmm. Ken was down there with the Orioles at that time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had two young sons, Justin and Matthew, Matthew being the oldest. And, you know, him being on the road a lot, my parents who had a three-bedroom house, a lot of equity in the house, figured that they might move down there to help him raise those two because he was on the road a lot. And that's how that worked out. So they moved.
Your nephew Justin played some minor league ball. He had a teammate by the name of Erica Kratz, who had some prominence this season, 2020, with the Yankees a few days ago. Erica Kratz, at the age of 40, finally announced his retirement from baseball. New York Post did a nice story on Justin a few months back and his relationship with Erica Kratz also, too. So you got that family thing going all around you, everywhere you turn and everywhere you look. Grammar school in Mount Vernon was? What grammar school again?
I went to Minnie S. Graham School. And I still remember the motto from Graham School. And then this was the time period where you went from kindergarten to eighth, and then ninth graders, all ninth graders at that time, went to A.B. Davis. That was called the Annex. And it was a melting pot. You can imagine in the 60s, people from all parts of the town coming together. And then finally, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade were at the new Mount Vernon High School.
And then you went to Mount Vernon High School. You were 5 years after Ken, obviously, at Mount Vernon High. Did you play other sports at Mount Vernon besides running track, getting involved with track and field?
So in ninth grade, I played baseball, and we had a super team. I was lucky to get some playing time on that team. But at that point, I knew that my baseball career was coming to an end.
What position did you play?
I played right field.
You took after your brother.
I played first base and right field. I was the type of guy, I guess I would be called a pesky hitter, where I could beat out a ball. I had some power, I could go with a good curveball and take it to right field. I was a right-handed hitter, but a fastball inside would always get me.
Would lock you up.
And yeah, I had a batting style like Elston Howard, who was the first African-American on the Yankees. Way back then, I was a Yankees fan. I don't like to say that publicly now. I'm only kidding. But being a Mets fan. But I emulated his style. And if you go to an old YouTube of Elston Howard, he really had his front foot by home plate and his back foot. Oh, I'd say his front foot was at 1 o'clock and his back foot was at about 7 o'clock. Uh-huh. And so the inside corner was a tough fastball could get you. Uh-huh. And so with that, as I was getting older, I realized these guys are pitching this ball faster. And so my next sport that I tried was basketball, which I was pretty good at, but basketball in Mount Vernon, pretty good doesn't cut it.
Right. I heard Denzel Washington was a pretty good basketball player, but not good enough. So he went on to do other things. Yeah.
Yeah. He worked. It worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah.
But, so I tried out for the basketball team as a sophomore, got cut. And my two best friends, who are to this day are still my two best friends, Michael Russell, who lives down in the Tampa area, and Dighton Osborne, who lives down in the Miami area, said, while you're getting ready for baseball, why don't you just run track during the indoor season to get ready for baseball? So I said, yeah, I'll do it. So I went. And fortunately for me, my sophomore year, Mount Vernon had one of the best teams they ever had. And the senior leadership of those guys was tremendous.
What year?
Oh, 70s, 69, 68. We're talking about 1967 and 1968. Mm-hmm. All right. And just, they were awesome. I mean, they had a team that went down and won the Penn Relays. The head coach, Dave Ryder, who is still with us at age 90. And every year I go up to visit him and his wife upstate New York. Robert Brook, who has passed away, was the assistant coach. It was just an awesome experience, and I loved it. I loved the individualism of track and also the teamwork and the camaraderie. So I had a great time, and I remember having a conversation with my father after the season and say, Dad, I don't think I'm going to play baseball anymore. I'm going to keep running track. And, you know, baseball, it was a tradition in our family. And he said, Fred, you do your own thing. And, you know, don't think that you have to play baseball for us. So, and I was fortunate. I got to go to the state, meet my sophomore year. And again, just being around this great group of guys, you know, the list is too long. Kenny Burton, Alex Young, Arthur Keys, Clinton Young, who turned out to be the mayor of New York.
Of Mount Vernon.
This whole group, they took us under their wing. And by the time we were seniors, we had perhaps the second best team in New York State history. It was awesome.
And your senior year, 1970?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a great team that year.
Yeah, that's the year I started high school. You graduated high school the same year, 1970. So you talk about the moment you realized this is it, track is it for you. You talked about a number of your accomplishments in Mount Vernon High School. What was your favorite accomplishment or your best accomplishment? Keep in mind, best and favorite may not be the same thing.
Okay. So I think my favorite accomplishment was when we went to the state meet up in Rochester that year, my senior year. The Mount Vernon team by itself outscored every other section except for one in terms of points. We had 5 gold medals. We had 2 silver medals. And we had, I think, 3 bronze medals.
Say that again, the scoring, what you guys did, because that's incredible.
We ended up with 5 gold medals at the state meet, 2 silver medals, and I believe 3 bronze medals.
And you outscored every other section except one points-wise.
Except for Nassau County, who finished second. Obviously, Section 1 won the meet on the back of the Mount Vernon team, although there were a lot of other good athletes from Section 1. But our score as a Mount Vernon High School team beat every other section except for Nassau. So probably my favorite moment. Obviously, my best moment was going out west to the Nationals. Back then, you had to be invited, and they only took 8 seniors. It was called the Golden West, and winning 2 races that day, the high and low hurdles, was obviously my best moment in high school track.
Where out west did you go?
So it was at Sacramento in a place called Hughes Stadium, which, I say maybe about 25 years ago, I went back and visited. And it was a really hot day. And I used to, just a quick story, I used to like to work out, warm up for about an hour. And, you know, I knew if I was running at a particular time, I'd try to warm up about an hour ahead of time. We used to have these big wool heavy sweats, and it was 98 degrees in Sacramento. And I was thinking that the meet started at 7 o'clock. So 6 o'clock, I'm up there warming up and I'm sweating up a storm and find out that the meet starts at 7:30. So I was like loose as a goose. And normally a slow starter who would be trailing after about 2 hurdles and then use strength to pick off people. I had the best start of my life. I led from the first step all the way to the last, to the tape, and had the best race of my life.
Here we are in Westchester Talk Radio, the sports report. John Marino with you as we talk with Westchester sports icons here on the sports report from time to time, like Fred Singleton, Mount Vernon, and White Plains sports icon. We'll be getting to the White Plains portion in just a bit. Here we are made possible by our good friends over at Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center. They promise to support our communities right through April of 2021. White Plains Hospital, special thanks to our heroes there for all they've done throughout the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon, Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola, Landscape Design and Construction of Armonk. Fred Singleton, off to Penn State University. You went after Mount Vernon High School. What made you select Happy Valley, the Nittany Lions? What other schools did you talk to besides Penn State?
So it came down to a few. Penn State, University of Pennsylvania, Texas Christian University, and Manhattan. So those were the main group that I was picking from. My mom was very great in terms of collecting all these recruiting letters, which are still down in an album down in the basement.
Was there pressure to stay at home and go to Manhattan right next door?
No, only because Manhattan, you know, is in the Bronx and it borders Mount Vernon. So it was like, you know, I didn't feel like I would be going away to school.
All right, so you wanted to go away. That was it. You wanted to go away?
Yes, I loved the coaching staff there. Freddie Dwyer and Gagliano at the time, two great coaches. Uh-huh. But it was too close. And it really came down to Texas Christian had recruited two of my teammates, Billy Collins and Greg Bryant, and they ended up going there. But I had no desire to go to Texas back in the early 1970s. So yeah. I did go out for the trip, and I did enjoy, you know, they wined and dined us. But I wasn't going to go out there. So it came down to the University of Pennsylvania and Penn State. And I liked both coaches, but University of Pennsylvania couldn't offer athletic scholarships. And although I was a decent student, you know, I was like a B student, I wasn't going to get an academic scholarship. So I went with Penn State. You know, it was big name, big sports school. 4 hours from here, and so that was far enough and close enough. So I picked Penn State over University of Pennsylvania.
Why do they call it Happy Valley? Is everybody happy in Happy Valley?
Not this year with the way the football team is playing.
Especially starting in the top 10, top 5 even, the rankings. Now what, 0-3 after a few weeks?
0-4.
0-4, right? Yeah.
They lost again. So,
how did this happen with this team? How did this happen with us?
So my daughter, Amanda, who's a teacher at Ridgeway Elementary School in White Plains, she and I were talking about it. And Coach Franklin, the football coach there, yes, his family is living in Florida right now. I think there's one of the children is susceptible to, problems, medical issues. And so with that, the family chose to live in Florida. And while he's still up at Penn State, obviously as a football coach of a major power, he's probably 23 hours a day working on the football program. So it might just be getting to him at this point in terms of, being away from the family.
Here's how you look at the Big Ten this year. Penn State is 0-4. Indiana is 4-0. Don't have to say anything more than that.
Yes. Yeah. That is true. It's the basketball season. You know? So
I'd like to see what Indiana does or doesn't do against Ohio State this weekend. So I think we'll get a better read on Indiana football after that
game. Yeah, that would be interesting. You know, Ohio State is not one of my favorite universities, being a Penn Stater. So, so we had a couple of losses to them that are memorable, you know, at the last second. So.
Best and happiest moments at Happy Valley for you, your Penn State track career. Tell us about that.
Okay. So, Penn State, my first 2 years, I was hurt a lot. A lot of shin splints, hamstring pull, learning new hurdles. They were 3 inches higher. I was not a very flexible athlete. I was more of what they would call a power hurdler who just would fly through the hurdles and a lot of fit. Yeah, I believe me, hurdles used to jump out of my way. Not a lot of finesse, And so it took me a while to get myself grounded. And then finally, by my junior year, I started getting back in the knack of things. Overwhelmingly, my favorite moment was when we won the IC4A championships my senior year. I was one of the co-captains with the late Charlie McGuire, who was NCAA six-mile champion. We had an awesome team, and Penn State, this was 1974, hadn't won the IC4A championships. This is before they went to the Big Ten. They hadn't won since 1959, and we won by about 30 points, and we just crushed everybody. It was an awesome experience. Great athletes, a lot of fun. I don't get to see those guys too often because the track reunions are an annual thing, and they're always the week of the Louts games. So I can never get out there to see a lot of my teammates.
Uh-huh. Now, at Penn State, what did you major in academically?
So I was I started off my first year. Remember, it's the early 70s. I was thinking, man, I'd love to be in the oil business, going around the world, finding oil for Exxon, or I don't know if it was still Esso at that time, but yeah. Just going
and
around
Sinclair,
the world.
So Dino the Dinosaur. Remember Dino the Dinosaur Sinclair?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we had a Sinclair station on my block on 106th Street, corner of First Avenue, we had. And then it became an Esso station after that. Yeah.
Yes. So I started as a geology major my freshman year. Then my sophomore year, during my freshman year, I had taken a geography class, which I absolutely loved. So I said, I'm going to be a map maker, a cartologist. And I thought I was going to make maps for Rand McNally and be in a Jeep somewhere driving around, mapping out roads and all these unexplored places. So that was going to be my life. And that summer, between my sophomore and junior years, I worked on a playground in Mount Vernon. And, you know, one of those summer jobs, working with kids. Right. And I absolutely fell in love with the idea of working with kids. And so I switched my major to education. It was a scramble because I had been in the science department. Now I'm moving over to the education department, and I had to get caught up on credits and stuff like that. But I decided at that point I was going to become a teacher and a social studies teacher.
So after Penn State, where did you go? Did you go straight to White Plains to the school system, or was there a stop or two in between?
I graduated from Penn State in late May, early June. And in September, I started working, September 1974, at the White Plains Community School, which was the alternative high school to White Plains High School. And I stayed there for 36 years.
All right. Now, Mount Vernon guy going to White Plains, your old pal Nick Panaro did the same thing, Mount Vernon to White Plains. What did that feel like to you? That's like I went to Fordham, for example, or you might remember my old CBS radio colleague, Gary Stanley, who was the play-by-play guy for Iona Radio Basketball for decades. He went to Fordham, graduated a couple of years before I did, and then went to work at Iona not long after that. And I said to him one day, I said, Gary, how can you do this? Iona, Fordham. I said, you have to check. That's what it's all about.
So a funny story. So I wasn't coaching my first 2 years. I was actually still running. I was running for the New York Pioneer Club. And I was still close to my Mount Vernon roots. I was living at home. So Mount Vernon was us, and White Plains, even though I was teaching there, was them. A job opening developed at White Plains High School in terms of being the assistant track coach to the aforementioned Nick Panaro, whose brother, Pete, I knew very well. We were classmates. And Pete was one of those left-hand sneaky pitchers who would throw that fastball on the inside and get me out. And, you know, then smile at me as I was going back to the bench. So when the job opening came up, I was tired of running. I put in my time. And I said, you know what? It's time to give back. And working with Nick Panero really was a great experience. He and I coached together for about 20-something years. We had some awesome teams. But to answer your original question, the Mount Vernon White Plains rivalry, of course, I heard it from my friends. You're working for White Plains. How could you do that? And there was a time, and I don't know, you might remember the year, Ben Gordon was playing for Mount Vernon High School. Mm-hmm. And Mount Vernon and White Plains were playing for the AA championship to see who would keep moving up into the state tournament. And it must have been like the early 90s or something. Yeah, like
mid-90s.
That. And
I'm at mid-90s.
I was at the county center with, and I saw a lot of my former track teammates. And one of them, Mike Young, who was a great hurdler and great basketball player for Mount Vernon High School, came up to me and said, "So who are you rooting for, Mount Vernon or White Plains?" And I looked at him, I said, "I got to go with the paycheck, man. I'm going for White Plains." So,
how did that go?
They all cracked up. They all cracked up. Yep. But for a long time, Mount Vernon was us and White Plains was them. But, you know, it switched once I started coaching and White Plains became the us. And, of course, New Rochelle was always the
outside. You haven't gone there yet, although I think you're one of your best friends nowadays, of course, is Coach Cap over in New Rochelle, Andy Capella.
Oh, yeah.
Who does the same thing you do with the track program over at New Rochelle.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he does it a lot better. You know, Cap has had the group. And why he's not in the Westchester Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I wonder about that sometimes, too, so... I'm sure.
I wrote an application for him, a recommendation, or however, you know, to try and get him in. I don't know how a guy who's won probably 38 of the last 40 county championships isn't in there, but you know, hopefully somebody will get him in pretty soon. But it's always interesting going up against Mount Vernon and White Plains. We're not in the same league anymore, so I don't get to see those guys as much.
They still have to try to find a way to have those two teams play at least once per year just because of the rivalry. I know that's not always possible, but it's something that, to me at least, should be worked on. You can move teams around based on, to me, enrollment and go AA, AB, however you do it, but certain teams still, like a Rye Harrison football game, they still have to play each other every year. It's something just
I agree.
As rivalry. And work New Rochelle in there, too. Some sort of round robin every year, at least. New Rochelle, Mount Vernon, and White Plains. You mentioned Ben Gordon, of course, who went on to have a great career at UConn, at Connecticut, and in the NBA with the Pistons and the Bulls, most prominently with those two teams in the NBA. And, you know, you went over to White Plains after you got out of Penn State and made your mark there in so many different ways, teaching in the classroom, too. You got involved with the Glenn D. Louch track and field games at White Plains High School. Tell us about that. You are the meet director to this day. You took over from Nick Panero.
Yes. So there have been 52 Louch games. I've been to 48 of them.
Now, at Mount Vernon, did you run at Louts?
I ran in the first three Louts games, and Mount Vernon was the first, my senior year, that famous senior team I was talking about earlier. We were the first New York team to win the Louts games. Roselle Catholic and Essex Catholic from New Jersey had won the first two, mm-hmm. and we, again, beat everybody pretty badly in the Louts games. And, in fact, probably except for a human life and the toll it's taken on people's jobs, the biggest disappointment for me with this COVID was that in May of this year, the group was coming back to honor our 50th year as the first team from New York State to win the meet. And we had guys coming from Texas, from Virginia. Our coach, Dave Ryder, was going to drive up from Florida to be part of it. So, you know, it's just that was one of the sad parts. But I've been to, except for the 4 years I was at Penn State, I was at every meet. Ran in the first three, missed the next four, came back for 2 years as just a spectator, then a coach, and then eventually the meet director starting in 2001. Mm-hmm.
So 20 years now you've been the meet director since you took over from Nick Panero, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. And you had your own meet at White Plains a few weeks after Louts every year for a number of years, the Fred Singleton Invitational also, too. So we have to get that back, the Fred Singleton meet at White Plains.
Well, it really wasn't called the Fred Singleton Invitational. It was it was more the Tiger Team Pentathlon.
Yeah, I would have the Fred Singleton Invitational, basically. The
Tiger I appreciate that. I try to keep my name off of things, but
To me, it was Freddie Meat. So you were there. It was Fred experience. Had you there at his behest.
Yeah, most, you know, the pentathlon, one athlete does five events.
Right.
And they score depending on how well they do in the event. So if you run a certain time in the hurdles, you get this many points. If you throw the shot put so far, you get this many points. So we took it to a different level. Instead of one athlete doing five events, a team would have five athletes each doing one event. Mm-hmm. And we'd score it just like a pentathlon. Right. So it was a lot of fun. It was interesting. And that went on for about 18, 19 years or so. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sure was. I had the opportunity to work the public address for a number of years with that.
Oh, that's right. That yes.
Every year. It was fantastic to see the pentathlon style meet with so much more participation with all the different events with an individual athlete doing one event, and just made it so much more wider and expansive. All the schools you would invite from Section 1 up and down the Hudson Valley. It was a great competition. Yes. Right after the Louts games. You touched upon the games being canceled in 2020 over at Louts at White Plains High School. 2021, what's the outlook so far for the Glenn D. Louts games? How do things look at the moment?
I am moving at the moment right now, John, because my battery is low, so I want to plug this in. But we are facing, obviously, this pandemic like everybody else. And, you know, I'm a little nervous about our future, you know, what's going on, not just the Louts games, but everybody's future. And I'm very, very thankful for these hardworking scientists who've come up with a
couple of different vaccines now we have, it looks, that are just about ready to go, and we might have a couple more on the way, which would allow for a lot quicker distribution and allow the Louts games maybe to have a regular turn of events in 2021 if all goes according to plan.
Yes. I don't know if the distribution will take place by the time early May comes around for the meet, right. But in terms of, and I'm assuming that it won't, so I'm assuming that there's three possible paths for Louts. We'd have our regular meet where we have athletes from 10 different states, provinces of Canada, et cetera. I don't know how likely that is. The next one is where, like in 2020, we don't have a meet. You know, that would be sad. And then the third one would be an altered meet, one that we don't have 32 to 3,500 athletes at White Plains High School, but more maybe a local meet or a New York State meet or a what they call a neighboring state meet, a neighboring state's meet. So we would have maybe Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Vermont. Our neighboring states. A lot depends on what the school district tells us we can do. And, you know, that obviously everybody's health is the major concern. So we will just have to wait to see just where we're at. We had a meeting of the Louts committee, a Zoom meeting in October to discuss some of these things. I've set up, the superintendent, the athletic director, and the principal, and a couple people on the Louts committee will be talking in January. just to get their views on where we're at in January, where they're, how big a meet they're willing to have on campus. I have a Zoom meeting set up for December with a subcommittee on the Louts committee to talk about an alternative schedule that we could present in case we are told that you have to have a meet of a certain size. So the plans are, you know, we're trying to stay ahead. And I'd be willing, to be honest, to have almost any type of Louts games,
right,
you know, so we could keep it going.
Especially after missing in 2020, anything for 2021 that would be able to be put together would be better than nothing again.
And I believe everybody would understand if I can't invite athletes from certain states.
No question.
And I would certainly understand if certain states can't come.
Right.
You know, a lot depends on what happens in the next few months. Obviously, it's not trending well at the moment, but we will just wait and see.
We'll see. If we can get these vaccines up and going soon, I think there's a much better shot for Louts to be as expansive as possible in 2021, to be held and to be expansive and close to what we know as the Louts games as possible in 2021. Fred Singleton, our guest here on Westchester Talk Radio, the sports report. I'm John Marino. Fred, you are an author of note, too. A few years back, you wrote a book called A Quorum's Child, and it's kind of like life imitating art. You kind of, in your own way, took a look ahead at the 2020 election without even really thinking about it back then.
So back in 2003, I was preparing an American history lesson on the amendments. And I came across an amendment, the 20th Amendment, the one that states that the president takes office January 20th. And Congress comes in on January 3rd. It set up a new timetable because previous to that, this was a 1930s amendment. Previous to that, it's called the lame duck amendment. Previous to that, the new president would come in March. So you can imagine an election in November and waiting all the way to March for the new president to take over. That's the lame duck period. And not a lot was done, so they decided to move it up to January. So I thought that was an important amendment, and I was reading some of the provisions in the amendment, and I came across, I think it was Article 3 of that amendment, that struck me a little funny, but I couldn't figure out exactly what struck me as being funny about it. So the next year, 2004, I'm reviewing that same lesson, seeing if I'm going to alter it or not. And I come across that 20th Amendment again, and I'm just, what is it with this amendment that's bothering me? So I decided to really start reading it, and about a week later or so, I realized that there was a provision in there that struck me as, I don't think this can work. It basically outlines that the period that we're in now, it's November 18th today, I believe.
Right.
So the period between when the presidential election is and the Electoral College meets to officially name the person as the President of the United States. Right now, they're calling Joe Biden the president-elect. But I think that's a misnomer. I believe that he does not officially become the president-elect until the Electoral College votes him in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this isn't a conspiracy theory or anything like that. I would have said the same thing for any candidate.
Right.
The amendment states if the president-elect dies previous to taking office in January, the vice president-elect takes over. Makes sense.
Right.
But what if the person died in this interim period he or she never would have become the president-elect. So the way that it's worded, according to logic, if, you know, if a sentence starts with if, then the second part of the statement depends on the first part of the statement. Mm-hmm. So if it says, if the president-elect dies, the vice president-elect takes over, what if there is no official president-elect? Right. That vice president can't take over because there was never a president-elect.
If not officially certified by the Electoral College.
Correct. So I thought about it and I said, oh no, I'm looking too far into this. So I started doing some research. This is 2004. I'm doing some research online and this group down in Naples, Florida said, you have to get in touch with this Yale professor. He is like the lead, one of the leading constitution experts that we have. I emailed him. I got an email back the next day. Fred, you have stumbled upon something I have warned Congress about. I even petitioned Congress. Here is a copy of that petition. If indeed this were to happen, there is nothing in the Constitution that would cover this problem. And there'd be no solution to it.
We would be presidentless at that point. We would be presidentless at that point. So what about the Speaker of the House taking over at that point? Any kind of provision for that?
Well, these are all when you have a president and a vice president, but we're in an interim period here. And if this were to come to pass, there is nothing in the Constitution to cover this particular, could it happen? Yes, it actually did happen in the election of 1876, but the person who was the loser of the election, Horace Greeley, died during this time period. So it didn't really matter in terms of the Electoral College.
Right.
In fact, I shouldn't say it didn't matter because a major thing happened. Three people, electors from Georgia, decided to vote for Horace Greeley, even though he passed away. And Congress ruled, it was, you know, when they bring the electors together to certify them, they have both houses there. They kicked the Senate out and the House looked at this and said, can we have people vote for a dead person? And they determined they couldn't. He wasn't qualified to be able to get votes because he was dead. Mm-hmm. So because of that, that further complicates things. So all these electors who are potentially, and please, I am not wishing this whatsoever, but if we were to fall into this during this election cycle, right, and something were to happen to Joe Biden, electors would vote for Joe Biden and their votes would be thrown out based on precedent in the House of Representatives, because that's what happened in 1876.
So Kamala Harris wouldn't just ascend to being president at that point then? Not that
again, I don't know how the courts would rule. But according to that amendment, my interpretation is she's not the vice president elect. She's the vice president elect, but the amendment says she would go forward if the president elect died. But we never had a president elect because the Electoral College never made him the president elect.
But she was voted for on the same ticket as Joe Biden at that point. And when you vote for a presidential ticket to me, you are also backing the vice president in case anything happens to the president. And we would have that situation there.
Yes, but unfortunately, the way it's worded, if the vice president-elect were to die, the vice president-elect would take over. Mm-hmm. There would be no president-elect because he passed away before he officially became the president-elect.
So this would all have to go to the courts, basically.
Yes, that's my interpretation.
Yeah.
That's how, so I wrote the book within 2000. Well, I wrote the book over several years and self-published it in 2016 with the future in mind. Obviously, I couldn't write about something that had not happened in the past, so I put it into the future, and I wanted it to be in the immediate future, only 4 years ahead. So I picked 2020, and believe it or not, in the book, I have an epidemic going on. Wow. Not to the degree that this one is. I also had a Supreme Court case based on electors from Washington State who challenged their role. And recently, I guess over the summer, the Supreme Court ruled that all electors have to vote for their state mandate. So if the Democrats in the state, they are forced now to vote for that candidate. Mm-hmm. So, but it wasn't always like that. And so in the lead up of my president, James Augustus Faulkner, passing away during this time period, there was a challenge from an elector from Washington State who did not want to vote for a dead person. So, it makes
sense. Yeah. You know, it comes down to the end, too. Horace Greeley never got to be president, but he did get a school in Westchester named after him.
Yes. Yes. Did. the fact that he was good enough to be even a nominee, yep, to be a candidate.
Historically, no doubt about that. The Quakers, yes, of Horace Greeley High in Chappaqua. Now, what's the official title of the book? The Quorum's Child and...
The Constitution Challenging Election of 2020.
And how do we get a copy of that?
It's on Amazon, and it sounds like a complicated story. It's actually a pretty good read. A lot of people it's an easy read. It goes into civics. It talks about, my favorite chapter is election night. Just like a couple of weeks ago, people were sitting there watching their television, and as the states would roll in, I did the same thing. The states rolling in and the count being, drawn up as each state was counted. And it was a lot of fun writing it. And I don't know if this, I think I have in one part of the book, I mentioned, if this happens 1,000 years from now, maybe they'll blow the dust off of this book and see that this could potentially have been a big problem, because it will be a big problem if it ever happens.
What's the next book? What's that about?
So I was thinking about another book, and I love trivia. So I've been working on a trivia board game. And when we canceled Louts, my wife Margot said to me, "Well, Fred, you used to work on this meet 24/7. What are you going to do with yourself?" I said, "I think I'm going to finish all my questions for my trivia board game." So sure enough, I was up at 6:30 in the morning doing research. I have all these little yellow pads around the house, in the car, just jotting down little things to research. And so I put together 7 categories, and all of them have 250 questions. My goal is 750 questions, which in a couple of them they have. And I struck out with one company. It's in Hasbro's hands at the moment to see if they want to pick it up. And if they choose to, then it'll be out. And if they choose not to, there's another company that it's almost like self-publishing it.
Do you have a name for this board game?
So the original name I had to my lawyer said I couldn't use because it had been my intellectual property lawyer, Paul Rapp up in Kingston, said that I couldn't use it because it had been used before. So right now it's called Trivia totally timely trivia, because all the questions deal with trivia, with time. So it's like, what was the last album put out by the Beatles? Who was the second assassinated president? In what year did so-and-so win the Pulitzer Prize? Who was the first person to be named People's Sexiest Man of the Year? Hmm. And they're all multiple choice questions. So it's easier than trivia. It's easier than Trivia Pursuit, but that doesn't mean that the questions themselves are easier.
Trivia is the name.
Yes.
At the moment. We'll look for that. Hopefully it'll be out there soon. Best of luck with that. Now, besides Ken, you got a very famous athletic family. You have a couple of well-known cousins. Doc Rivers, the 76ers coach now, former Knick, longtime Celtics and Clippers coach, won an NBA championship in 08 with the Celtics. I know you call him Glenn by his real name. And Eddie Murray, too, baseball Hall of Famer. Eddie Murray, all part of the same family. Doc, of course, has his son, Austin, who played for him in the NBA and has played for a number of teams now in the NBA. So you have a second cousin down the line there, too, with Austin Rivers. Ever go one-on-one with Austin or Doc on the court?
We have a very, very close cousins group. We just had a Zoom the other day. Today is Wednesday. We had a Zoom on Sunday. We try to Zoom each other once or twice, you know, once a month or once every 2 months. And so we had one the other day. But back in when we were much younger, my parents were the only ones that lived in New York. Everybody else lived in Chicago.
Right.
And we would go out to Chicago for July 4th to have a family picnic at one of my aunt's house. And we would have the famous volleyball games. And I was one of the youngest of the older cousins. And he, Glenn, was one of the older of the youngest cousins. Mm-hmm. So we were always on opposite sides.
You got a family set up like my family. Same thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Same way. So then one year after the volleyball game, we decided to play basketball. And Glenn was on the opposite side, and he was coming down on a fast break, and I was the last defender. I'm still looking for him. He put a move on me. Uh-huh. And 35 years later, I am still looking for him because he made a move that was unbelievable. So, yeah. So, no, you know, we didn't grow up in the same area. But, yeah, I've become a 76ers fan for the first time since the Dr. J era. Uh-huh. So, I'm rooting a lot for him.
And you can add to the family story here. I worked a charity event with Glenn, with Doc, back in the mid-90s during my WFAS White Plains days. I got a picture from that. And my parents proudly displayed that picture down at their place in Florida. My mother passed away about a year ago, but up here in the Bronx where I am with my father again now, that is displayed. My mother had that up. My father's got that up. That picture, I have two or three pictures of my career they have up, and that's one of them. Me with Doc Rivers. And when we took that shot, I went around with some of the neighborhood guys around here in the Bronx, and I said, I'm going to bring my pal Doc down to the court. Me and him got next. How about that? You don't have to do that, John. We believe you know. So.
Yeah. So I have to make one correction. Eddie Murray is a good family friend, but he is not related.
I thought he was. Is he related to Doc, to Glenn? Is he a cousin on the other side of the family? I have heard that, too, that they're cousins.
They might be. Who knows? Right. What might have happened. Glenn's uncle was Jim Brewer, who used to be a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
But,
University of Minnesota, right?
Yes.
University of Minnesota was involved in that little dust up with Luke Whitty back in the early 70s, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I was in my early high school years at that time between Minnesota and Ohio State.
I'm not sure about the other connection, but.
Did you ever sit around the family table, you, Ken, Doc, Glenn, Eddie being such a close family friend and play. Can you top this amongst the four of you? You can put Austin in there now, too.
So we have family reunions every so often, and we worked to have one this past summer, and obviously that, you know, bit the dust. We're now looking at 2022. The last one I wasn't able to go to, and it was down in Florida. My daughter went, and that group was there, Kenny and Glenn and his family were there. So I missed that one. The one before that, was Glenn there? Ken was there. I'm not sure if Glenn was there. So, you know, it's, everybody's all over the map now. But we stay in touch with each other. It's a close group. The Hathaways. This is
I'd like
mother's
to see
side.
You guys play Can You Top This and go back and forth. You have everybody on an equal plane all the way across, just the way it should be. We've talked for about an hour here now. Why don't I ask you before we part company here, your future plans? I know you still have a lot more to do. What are they?
My plans?
Yeah, future plans.
So this is year 40.
Right? Yeah. You're working on that always, 24/7, 25. Okay.
So this is year 45 coaching at White Plains. There's never been a coach in the history of White Plains High School that's coached for 50 years. And I don't think there's been anyone who's coached for 45 years. So I'm thinking, do I have the juice to make it to 50 years? We'll see.
I think you'll do it.
I'm enjoying it. I did have to say, though, I did enjoy my time off from March with the COVID, being home with my wife and just hanging out and laughing and living and just having a good time. So I got a glimpse of what retirement really is. And we'll see. But I'm enjoying coaching. Tomorrow we have our awards afternoon with the kids. So everybody's getting nice little plaques. And I enjoy being around the kids a lot. I think I'm still pretty good at it. We have a lot of laughs, and the program is in good hands. There's a bunch of young coaches at White Plains High School that when one day I say that's it, then that's it, the program will be well. But right now, I'm still sailing forward with that and still enjoying the heck out of coaching young people.
Late 90s, elected to the Westchester Sports Hall of Fame, White Plains Sports Hall of Fame member. Also last year in 2019, the White Plains Chamber of Commerce had an event just for you, amongst the many other accolades you have racked up throughout your lifetime and throughout your career. What's the key to Fred Singleton? What has made you tick through all these decades? What has made you do what you do, the dedication, everything you've done, everything you show as a mentor, as someone to look up to, as someone who is, and I do believe athletes are role models as someone, and as you as a teacher and instructor too, as one of the best role models I think anyone could possibly have. What has been the key for you? How did you get to where you got to?
I think my two parents, Joe and Lucille, played the biggest part. And I think everything that I do, somewhere in the back of my head, I think, would mom and dad be happy with this decision? I don't think everything I did always made them happy, but it is a lot in terms of what I do and what I don't do. I can't do that. I know mom and dad would not be happy if that was it. So they've been the riding factor. And a lot of it has been luck, you know, just happening to be in Dave Ryder's gym class.
Right.
And doing running one day and him asking me to come out for the team and me getting cut from basketball and falling into that situation. I mean, it's a lot of it's luck. And but a lot of it is, I know my parents are still looking and watching over me, and I want to do things that make them still proud. So
that's a great story. Brett Singleton, thank you for your time today here in Westchester Talk Radio. We've spoken before through the years in a variety of different venues. I know we'll talk again, and let's hope the Louts games 2021 do come to pass in some way, shape, or form. That's important to everybody in White Plains and around Westchester and throughout this tri-state area, especially in the realm of track and field.
John, I always call you the voice. You have that radio voice, and you do a lot for the high school athletes here in Westchester and the area, and I appreciate all you do. And thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I hope to see you soon.
Yep, we'll see you soon. We'll call Ken, get in touch with him, and have him on with us one day soon also as well, too, hopefully. And we'll get maybe one day have the two of you on together and compare stories back and forth.
Okay.
That would be fun.
That would be fun.
Friends, all right, John. Thank you. Talk radio. All the best. You and yours. Stay safe, most importantly.
Thank you. Definitely. You too. Thank you, folks, for listening.
Yeah, here on Westchester Talk Radio, and I'm John Marino, and we are made possible by Shark Creative. That's Shark with a C, not a K. See the logo in orange and blue on the wall behind me. Made possible also, too, by Entergy, our good friends at the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. Nicholas Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Nicholas. Hightower, Westchester, managing your wealth through a fiduciary standard. Also, to White Plains Hospital, thank you to our heroes there for all they've done throughout the pandemic of 2020 here, the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. Let's hope those vaccines come rolling out real soon. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation of Mount Vernon and Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville and Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction in Armonk. We thank you one and all. Catch all of our Westchester, Fairfield County, Putnam and Dutchess talk radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.